Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the follow-up, where we pull back the curtain on the world of live events. And tonight, we're focusing on fundraising galas. I am Katie Robinette, your host, along with my sidekick.
I'm Jose Johnson.
And we are honored to have you tonight. Please join us in welcoming our guest, Teresa Schultz-Fogelman.
Thank you.
Hey. She is the, I want, what I consider the gala queen.
Oh, do I get a crown?
I didn't bring one for you, but I can get one for you. The reason I think Teresa is a gala queen, I met Teresa, Central City Orchestra performed for the York County SPCA Gala. Gosh, was it 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
22 and 23, I think.
Right after the pandemic.
Yeah.
I was blown away with Teresa's event planning style. I had not worked with anyone up until that point that was so precise when it came to planning the event and how you wanted it to go. You just had every aspect of the event covered. And coming from a world where entertainment, we have to entertain for hours at a time and make sure that people are engaged for an entire night. You already had that covered before I even came into the picture. So I was shocked. I was enlightened. I was honored to have been at the gala and see you in action.
Oh, thank you.
She's very on point.
Which I understand that's why you probably enjoy being around her, because you are very on point.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks. I mean, you know, I feel like that's one of those things you don't know until someone points it out to you.
I agree. And I think that the devil is in the details. And
the devil
probably what you do and definitely what I do
is in the details. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the art of fundraising galas. And it is an art.
It is.
It certainly is an art. We've done many on the performance side. You know, of course, we sit in planning meetings, but we are not really involved very much in the ins and outs like you are. A lot of times we show up, we do the job that we need to do, we entertain. But it's more than a fancy night out. Galas are a major revenue source for a lot of nonprofits. In your key experience, what are the elements that make a gala truly successful?
Well, I think first of all, thank you for that and for being our band. I think we had Central City Orchestra for 22, and then I'm pretty sure we had Downtown Sound for 23.
Three, yeah.
So you guys were great to work with. And I think really the success of an event kind of goes back to what I started out by saying, the devil is in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that an event, to plan an event, you should be planning an event like you want to go to.
Uh-huh.
And you guys have obviously performed at a lot of events, weddings, galas, everything else in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I've have been to many, many galas, and that's kind of what started my interest in planning a gala, because I knew what I didn't want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what a good gala looked like, and I knew what a gala that needed some help also looked like. And you mentioned that it's a huge fundraiser for a lot of charity organizations. The gala is probably the single largest fundraiser they're going to do in a year.
Sure, sure.
And it's also probably the most labor-intensive event that is, you know, going to happen in a year. And
you got to spend money to make money.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things I could talk about with that.
Sure.
Because a gala, it doesn't come cheap.
And it's not for everybody. It doesn't fit everyone's.
It doesn't fit everyone's agenda or mission.
Right.
But I think one of the things that makes what the galas that I've done have always been for organizations that were very connectable. And what I mean by that is I've done 8 galas in my tenure. I'm not a professional event planner, but I have always been an event planner, lowercase event planner, starting with my background in sales and marketing and kind of one-stop shopping in my career with everything related to the marketing world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a good gala has the elements of a party while also connecting the guests with a mission. And so finding that mission or finding the right people to connect to the mission is critical. The charities that I've worked with, American Cancer Society and the SPCA, are both highly connectable, meaning there's no one that doesn't have someone related to, you know, the American Cancer Society or dealing with cancer. And you're hard-pressed to find someone who wants nothing to do at all with the animal rescue world or the, you know, animal welfare world. And where we live, in the town that I live in York, Pennsylvania, you know, we have, that is a very large part of our community, those two organizations. So that's the key. I think that one of the most singular, most important keys is finding a way to connect individuals with the mission to make the event, you know, even get the event off the ground towards success.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, from my perspective, you know, being part of the entertainment side of things, it's interesting sometimes to be in an event where that's not what happens. You know, when you're, when we're, from the moment we walk in to the time we leave, it's like, what the hell was this really all about? And the messaging was not very clear. The theme, and while themes can have this kind of external, it can be something separate from the main mission, but there has to be a level of connection to it. It has to make sense. And so sometimes I feel like in some events, the not great events, there's this, all these disconnects. The mission is not clear. The theme has no correlation to the mission, and it's very haphazard. But when working with someone who has that very clear driven purpose, where the mission, the connection, the way everything is set up, everything is this cohesive unit. And those are the ones that you just walk out going, man, that was a great event to be a part of. So, I mean, what drives you to make these wonderful marriages of all the parts that, that create this wonderful event that, you know, we've been able to be a part of in the past?
Well, I think for me personally, what drives me is they are missions that I connect with. I'm a two-time breast cancer survivor, so working with the American Cancer Society was something that came very naturally to me. Being in charge, taking over that event as the chair many, many, many years ago, I wanted it to be successful because it was for an organization that I was already raising a lot of money for and I was invested in. And the same with the SPCA. When I came to the board of the SPCA, I honestly believe I was named to the board or elected to the board to bring a gala. Well, I know to be. The president at the time focused on that in my interview with that organization, and she wanted that. And so for me, the drive is because it's personal. But I think it's personal for a lot of people. And based on the fact that, you know, we can fill those rooms and raise a lot of money, it's that, that's true. And when you talk about the disconnect, again, I've been to events where I'm like, are we at a party? Are we at, are we raising money tonight? Like, what is happening here exactly? And the key is to make them married. Because at the end of the day, when I talk to a team or my committee, we have one purpose with this event, one singular purpose at the end of the day, and that's to raise money. And if that is, if we are not successful in that, then we've wasted money. Because as we've noted, galas are very expensive to put on.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, we have rules. I, again, I'm not a professional event planner, but I've learned, I've done a lot of studying and honing of my craft, if you will. You know, there's a percentage of expenses versus income that I won't go over. And so I have to figure out how to make that happen. Because at the end of the day, it's about raising money. Yeah. But it's also about having fun while doing it.
Sure.
And so, you know, you asked me about the theme or what how you marry that theme. One of the events that you, that your band, the most, the Downtown Sound was at the most recent one. So I'm not sure if either of you were actually there, but we created a full on nightclub theme. It was Studio 54.
Yeah.
In that space.
Yep.
And it also helps that I have the best decor planner on the whole earth. He transforms that space and you would never know that you're in the ballroom of, you know, the country club. And it was just insane. But from the moment that guests arrived, I had paparazzi out there taking photos, shouting, what are you wearing? Who are you wearing? And I had the red carpet lined up with the stanchions and we had a big sign. We named it the Augie's Nightclub.
Nice.
And no one knew who Augie was at that moment, but Augie was actually our canine guest of honor for the SPCA. Yeah. The story was about him. And so we kind of kept that eye on that ball all night, weaving those themes together so that the mission speaks, but people are having fun in a thematic environment while it's happening.
Like you said, you're there to raise money. And so it's there to create an environment where people want to spend the money. They want to be a part of it. And the exciting piece, I think, for the SPCA Gala is when you presented Augie on stage. People just kind of melted.
People were, women in formal gowns and men in tuxes were crawling on the floor with this dog. And that's when I, as the hostess or the executor of the event, the chairperson, when I was like probably in tears because it worked.
Really
it
did.
Worked. And, you know, it worked.
You know, I gotta say, there's something about dogs. You know, it's something about animals. Everyone loves animals. So, I mean, I think that's like a home run hit sell there to bring out a dog. I think cancer's harder.
Cancer's, yes, it is. It's harder. And what I found with the cancer galas, I did four of those. And then the fifth one I was involved with, I was actually the honoree. So I was actually the speaker. I was Augie. I was
you
the perfect guest of honor.
Did people get on the floor and roll around?
No. But we went to Mexico the next day, and I'm pretty sure. But, it is harder. And so with something like that, what I found with that, it was a lot easier to focus on a very specific restricted fund. And what that means is that you are raising money for a very specific aspect. And so we raised money for Hope Lodge. If you've ever been familiar with that, the Hope Lodge was housing for individuals who were going through treatment more than 50 miles away from their home for them, for the patient and a caregiver, a family member. And so that was something people could get behind. Or, you know, we've raised money for other specific programs. I've always driven the research component of it because personally, for me, research has been beneficial in my medical journey. And I know that it's critical to everyone's medical journey, but it's not sexy. And so it's a lot harder to translate that into something tangible.
Yes.
And so it is. You're right about that. Like finding that moment where people go, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And so even like with the Hope Lodge, we could show images of it. We could show families dining in the kitchen. And there's no one that can't relate to that.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about research, it's kind of tougher.
Yeah.
So it is. It's finding what is going to resonate. And the other thing that's important with it is finding the story that's going to resonate to keep the main mission. And we do party and we do have a lot of fun and we have a lot of great things that happen during that evening. But the main thing is to raise money. And so having a story that resonates with the guests and having a speaker that is connectable, that's my term, paddles go up.
I mean, I'm sitting between two cancer survivors.
Oh, honestly. Congratulations.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a big thing for me in terms of the importance and, you know, understanding, I guess. For me, I have a fairly global view of everything. I try to look at the big picture as well as the details of things. But, yeah, the emotional connection that people have with things can be that driving factor, the thing that, like you said, will put the paddles up. But I'm curious, particularly from your perspective, as I know you have the background in the sales and marketing and things like that. How do you manage to trip those emotional triggers to get people to open the wallets up without being too salesy? Because I know a lot of times when I get approached about doing things, that sometimes it's like, oh, really? You know, there's kind of that cringe factor to it. How do you manage to, and I know connectability would be one of those things, how do you manage to bridge that gap between asking for the money and making people want to give the money? How do you bridge the objections that some people will throw up?
So I think objections is a really good word because we run into a lot of them, whether it's in that environment at the gala or, you know, in the beginning parts of raising money to get sponsors or to get people to donate items for the auction. You know, I think it comes back to authenticity. I think that's the key, that I can speak to these things because it's real for me. You know, I'm not a salesperson coming into town selling a drug. It's real. It's something that I've experienced. And I'm a writer, and I'm also a speaker. So when I go out and speak, I'm speaking about my story. I'm not speaking about Jose's story. And so there will be people who connect with me that won't connect with you and vice versa. But it's finding that those very common human, I think it's finding the common humanity in what will make someone feel the heartstrings. And when we're picking a speaker for these events, when I'm picking a speaker, I have a couple boxes that have to be checked. And the first one is the story has to be what I consider compelling. You know, it can't be, for example, Augie was very compelling. If anyone had ever paid if you were paying attention to the news at all last year, we know that there was a dog, a German Shepherd, that was severely beaten in York County that the police officer rescued and ultimately adopted. Chance, he was our backup, but Chance was still in the process of being adopted, and we needed to have a little bit more time. But no one could not relate to that. No one could watch that and not feel emotion. So finding a compelling story, having someone who can tell the story, who wants to tell the story, because not everybody wants to get up and speak. Sure. Not everyone feels comfortable with that. In a way that is not too slick. I don't want a salesperson. I want someone telling their story in a way that is real and authentic, not too slick, who can do it in the prescribed amount of time. Because as you've noted, I
very tight ship.
Very run a tight ship.
Yep.
And usually, I want a happy ending. I've actually done a few with the Cancer Society that we did not have a happy ending, where the speaker was telling the story about his son who passed when he was 20. But it was it was an amazing story. They checked all the other boxes, and we did, you know, extremely well with that appeal as well, because the story resonated. And so I hate salesy stuff too. And so you have to, I guess it goes back to the authenticity of the asker and of the communication.
I feel like, though, if you've purchased a ticket to a gala, you have an intention to support. So you come in there ready to open your wallet and ready to give. So I feel like the people that walk through the door.
There's already an investment.
There already is.
And investment. In some cases, there is not. And again, as a hostess, one of the things that I try to do at every event that I host, whether it's a personal party that we're having or a gala that I try to touch every single person in that room in some way. I want to make contact with the sponsor who gave me a $10,000 sponsorship, the person who might have bought a single ticket, or maybe the person who hasn't bought anything but came as a guest. I want to touch them in some way because I want them to leave feeling closer to our mission. Whether or not they cared about us in the beginning or whether they just got invited to this event, wanted to buy a fancy dress. That happens a lot too. And that's okay too, because I'm very confident at the end I will have drawn them closer to whatever our mission is. And I guess I'm talking a lot about the SPCA specifically because that's been my most recent events, but it was no different than the Cancer Society. And, you know, people would come up to me years later and say, I remember that gala. You know, my grandma was diagnosed right after that. And so there are those moments of connection that stick. And so, but yeah, you're right. I mean, totally. I mean, when you're coming there and you've already paid money, you already are expecting that you're not leaving there without something. And there's also, I mean, my goal as a fundraiser is I want to have the right people in the seats.
Right.
You know, I want the people who are going to spend.
You want the right people.
That's the point, right?
Pre-qualification.
Yeah. I mean, I can't pre-qualify everybody, but, you know, you go after the people that you know are going to be willing to bid and to buy and to spend.
What I kind of want people to get from this podcast tonight is, especially those in the planning business of galas, is I want them to take something home to, you know, to learn and to help with their galas. And I want to use this as a platform for them to learn from you, which is why it was so adamant that I had you here to kind of divvy out these little details. But that's where we come into play. You know, you can't have a gala until you got to start it. You got to start at home plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm tapped often. Like, people will call me and ask me for help. And I have a friend who says, you should be doing this for a living. Unfortunately, the people who need my help can't afford me because they're charity galas.
Yeah.
And they're usually run by volunteers, just like me, the events. And so the starting plate is the first thing out of the gate is, I'll repeat what I said earlier. You have to have a vision in mind for an event that you'd want to attend.
Sure.
And secondarily, you have to be very, very organized. Before you even start to think about this, you have to be organized. And what are we going to do here? Have targets and goals. I'm working right now with another organization. I'm trying to help them a little bit on the backside, not as an official committee member, but trying to help them with their gala. This will be their third one. There were no goals. Well, what do you want to have happen at the end of this? How much money do you want to raise? What are your targets? Because that's how you build everything. Then you build a work plan. You build a timeline. You build your strategy in terms of how much money do I need to raise in sponsorship? And sponsorship
is a big question.
It's a whole nother ballgame.
That's a whole nother ballgame.
And so I think one of the things that separates an event planner, a fundraiser from a wedding planner, because I've planned several weddings, is a wedding planner doesn't need to raise money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to do every single thing at a gala that I did for a wedding, every last thing. And I have to raise money on a sponsorship, and I have to put on an auction, and I have to put on an appeal. And so how do you start to get sponsors? Well, I mean, that's really hard. And first of all, you have to be someone who's willing to actually call somebody up or approach
them. That's where the sales person comes into play.
Sponsorships are development in any kind of fundraising environment. It's really sales, and it takes a long time to develop a sponsor. In the sales world, it takes 5 to 7 interactions before someone will buy or commit, and it's no different. I mean, the number of times I had to chase, even my best friends who were off, they were not off the hook at all. Like, they were giving me money. It was just a matter of getting that check in my hand. You have to work that, and so it's relationships with people you already know, creating a prospect list, networking, asking people that you might have worked with in other events, you know, who else do they know or where have they gone? You know, somebody who might have been a sponsor for me in an event a million years ago is now at a different company, but I know that they're connected to my mission.
Yeah.
And so now I've got that company. And so it's really all about developing the relationships, networking with everyone you possibly can, working the sales process, and delivering what you promise on the sponsorships, because it's a lot easier to keep one than it is to get a new one, just like in any sales environment. So, yeah, I mean, and the fundraising portion of it, the majority of the money for any of these events comes from sponsorships. That's like the big nut, if you will. And my goal was always to have my sponsorships wrapped by six months away from the event. Because that's going to pay my bills.
Yeah.
Because after that, then I can relax.
Yeah.
And focus on other things. But it's labor intensive. It's work intensive. And you cannot be a shrinking violet.
Yeah.
You have to be.
That's where I'd feel like I'd fall right off.
Yeah. But, you know, there are people who on committees where they don't want to ask for money. So maybe they'll ask for an auction item from someone they do business with.
Yeah.
Nope. They don't want to ask for an auction item either. Well, maybe they'll show up to auction prep. Or so there's everybody's got a place.
Got a skill.
Yeah, everybody's skills fit in somewhere. Not every key fits every hole, but I can find something for everybody who wants to be a productive part.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, obviously, well, with anything, organization is key. Yeah, you've got to have a plan. You got to be able to think things through. Start with the end in mind. Yes, you have your home plate, which is, you know, your mission. You've got the ultimate goal, and then you kind of have to fill in the gaps in between. But the harsh reality is that the best laid plans of mice and men sort of thing. How do you balance the timeline and, you know, keeping things moving and having, you know, from the initiation all the way up to the completion? How do you manage that and still find time to be flexible to the changing environments, whether it be the long-term changes that occur during the planning portion or the day of when something kind of goes awry?
Hello, COVID. Yeah. So our first gala event for the SPCA was scheduled for May of 2020. Obviously, the world blew up in March.
Yep.
So I actually started that in December of 18. I put out a very quick little social media message saying, I'm back. I'm going to do another gala. Who's in? I didn't say for whom or for what. And I started getting messages, mostly from committee people from before. And so within a month or two, we had an official committee and we did an official launch. And we were on time. We were on track. We had everything rocking and rolling. And then 3 months before our event, the world shut down. So that was probably, talk about rolling with the punches, right? And at that time, everyone thought that, oh, this is only going to be 6 weeks, two months. So we all rebooked. And another one of my very favorite galas in our community, in our space, she booked at the same club that I was booking at the night before. And I called them and I said, this is not a good idea, y'all. We share a lot of sponsors. We share a lot of guests. One of us, we're going to suffer. This is not good for either one of our events. Well, we didn't have to fix it because COVID fixed it.
Yes.
And so then we booked again for October of the same year. Yeah. And then that didn't happen. So then we came back to the table and said, we have no idea what's going to happen in the next 12 months. I think we need to pause and just look at 1 year out from now. So 18 months after our first gala, 3 years almost from my initial planning. My initial planning started in December of 18. My first gala happened in October of 21. So how do you stay, how do you keep that timeline on and also find the space to be flexible? Number one, it's a regular routine accountability to the plan. The way I run things is I have a timeline plan that's all the same, and that also becomes the minutes. So everything is in that same document. Everything that is undone after the date that it was due, if the deliverable was due on May 10th and we don't have it done, it goes in yellow until it's done. Mm-hmm. It gets highlighted. So there's just a lot of, there's got to be a lot of room for flexibility.
Yeah.
Because with that, I mean, I had to re-sign my contracts.
Yeah.
I had to re-sign the club. I had to re-sign, you know, my band. I had to re-sign everybody. Every time I had to go back with another legal document, with another contract. And, you know, thankfully, everyone was in the same boat.
Yeah.
And flexible. Day of stuff. Well, there's some, I'm lucky. I have listened to some of your stories and I know that day of stuff can really blow things up. I've not had that many. And I'm going to knock on wood. I don't think that's wood. We'll try that. I haven't had that many. I've had a few snafus. That first gala, 18 months after it was supposed to be scheduled, a couple things happened that night. This was to a new audience. No, we had not had a gala before. So there was not like I already had the brand. I didn't have this signature event. I had all new people in that room, including the staff of the SPCA who had never done this and didn't even know like what it was supposed to look like. When I was working with a development person, I said, I want you to Google the word gala and look at those pictures. And she said, which ones? I said, all of them. And she said, what event? I said, all of them. What state? Any. Because I just was trying to teach her that what it looks like, what a real, true black tie gala looks like. The biggest event, the biggest thing that happened that night was my band missed not one time, but twice their call.
I remember you talking to me about this.
So I know that in some cases you guys get hooked up to be the MC, but I always had a media person.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, and I run a tight script. Mm-hmm. Everybody says exactly what's in her.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They get a script. Twice and welcome back to the stage.
Band they band. Weren't there.
Mm-mm. I had to go and find them. And so dead air, uncomfortable. I was embarrassed. I had a couple sponsors come to me after that and said, I don't know. I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't know if we want to come back. And of course, I had to beg them to come back because I knew that we were better.
Yeah.
And then we were. In the second gala, I moved the country club from one club to the other. I had two vendors not show up because they went to the wrong club.
I remember that too.
Yeah, you guys were at Central City was our band that time.
Yes,
so
I remember that.
I had two vendors not come. And so they were like an hour late.
Yeah. They went to another country club.
Yeah, so that happened.
I remember that. I mean, that is, you know, that is what it means to be a professional. No, you're hiring professional people, but, you know, especially with bands, which is what I'm speaking for, is that, you know, hiring professionals that are privy and understanding of what it means to be on time, on point, is so important. when creating events like yours.
Details.
As you said, the devil is in the details. I think that might be the title of your show tonight.
It is. The devil is in the details.
But it's so important to hire professionals for events like these.
And this was.
Yeah.
I won't tell you who. But
yeah, I know. I was there and I feel your pain on that.
And the band. The band was. That was.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, you guys.
Thank God.
Yeah. No, I would never want that hanging over my head. Ever, ever, ever.
Well, and I think that speaks to the importance of the synergy of the people that are involved in it. And having it's not necessarily that you have to have skin in the game too much. I mean, you're getting paid, that immediately is your skin. But I think that when there's a level of commitment to not only doing your job, but doing your job to the best of your ability and seeing yourself as an asset to the event. And that's where, like, I do remember the SPCA thing now, because I'm a huge animal lover. And, you know, some of the other events, there have been some events I've been in, and it is basically has been a paycheck for me. But then there are some where there is that immediate connection, mm-hmm. that personal connection to the mission, where it just brings your level up because you're wanting to do above and beyond what you would typically do because you believe so much in what you're doing. So I think when there's that buy-in from all of the different vendors and the the entertainment and all, and everybody is working together to make the event the best possible, that's when the magic starts to happen.
Yeah, and just as an aside, I know I've thanked you before, but I'm not sure which year it was, but you guys actually shared our fundraising page after the event because you loved it so much. So that was really awesome to me. And I appreciated it so much, like your band that came on your page. But yeah, you're right. And so I think, again, to go back to a new event planner, having or someone who's starting out doing this for the first time, understanding that most people that you're going to put together in that room have done some sort of an event before. You know, if you're hiring professionals, they've done weddings, yeah. They've done another kind of event, but they haven't done your event.
No.
And so I think, as the conductor of the event, I lay out the expectations. And so yeah. I would have a conference call. I would have 3 month and then 1 month and then 1 week communications with, for example, my media, my celebrity hosts. And even you and I had a number of conference calls where we spoke about the way the evening is going to go. And I wrote out, I had a very long script that was probably overdoing it, but I left no room for anyone to say, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing right now? How is this supposed to work? Because getting that buy-in and getting that team effort is important. It is making everybody feel like we are working together. And I know you've talked about that on your other podcasts in the wedding world, where everyone needs to feel that. And it's the exact same.
So what happens a lot of the times when I work for other galas is they will give me their timelines, their script. And, you know, I'm at this point where, is this exactly what they're reading? Or are they going off script? Mm-hmm. What's going on? They will give me... Here's the thing. This is when you need professional vendors. You need a vendor that can look at your timeline and say, so you're saying I should be there 10 minutes early waiting, right? Because they might end early. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. These are the kind you need to be asking questions like this when it comes to a timeline. We need to be prepared early. We need to fill in the gaps here, which is very similar to wedding planning where, you know, you have a timeline, but it is like a rubber band.
Sure. Some things are flexible. And I think one of the first things I ask of the space, the venue, is I want to know who the captain of the floor is at night. Who is my contact in the venue? Because I'm going to have eyes on them. And that was the same thing I asked of the band. Who is my contact in the band? Like if I need to make a change or if we want, something has to happen, I need to know who I'm looking
at. That is so important. A lot of times I'm working a gala, but my point person is nowhere to be found. And so, of course, I have a lot of questions because I've got to relay, you know, something to 10 other people.
Right.
So I'm running around looking for this person. Do I need to fill 5 more minutes?
Right. And having eyes, communication.
I mean, communication is super, super important on these type of events.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the professional attitude that you have. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes what happens with, particularly with nonprofits, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not getting paid, so, mm-hmm. yeah. Sometimes you get what you pay for or what you don't pay for. And, you know, having that level of commitment and professionalism and making sure that, you know, all of the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
I think so, because I'm mostly planning these things, and I'll interject and just say that most of the people I work with are very passionate mm-hmm. about their organizations. They just might not have the planning skill.
Yeah, it's keyhole again, I always call myself a unicorn with these kind of events, not because I'm vain and I think I'm the only one, but you really have to find the right people to plan these events. You need someone who has the time and the resources and the skills. That I watch events flounder because mm-hmm. they don't know what to do. And, you know, there's so many other things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
You need a good leader. You need a good captain. You need to have someone who is kind of ready to figure it out, work on it. I mean, it's all about building that. So figuring out what your goal is, figuring out what your timeline is, your plan, figuring out who your team is. I mean, and for me, I sort of go backwards. I start with my team. I want to make sure that I've got some people on board with me before I even go anywhere else. I already have the vision in my mind, but I haven't talked about it to anybody. And, you know, one of the challenges I had with the most recent gala is the organization was going through a great deal of transition, and I ended up doing probably 90% of the work myself. And that's a lot of work because I'm not willing to let my standards fall.
Yeah.
And so I'm willing, unfortunately, to the detriment of everyone around me, to do what it takes to deliver the event that I know. So my rule is, number one, you have to have all those things. And one of the other things I want to make sure I add here is that the other mistake that people make is not picking the right time.
Yeah.
And not picking the right date.
Yes.
So where we live in a small community with finite resources.
Yes.
I mean, we're not in Philly. We're not in D.C.
Yeah.
We're in a small towns with finite resources, with only so many philanthropic companies who are willing to write big checks and a lot of nonprofits who want a slice of that pie. And so in our gala seasons, we have two in central Pennsylvania. We have spring gala season and we have a fall gala mm-hmm. season. The problem with that is we also have a lot of people who are trying to share that space. And then in the fall gala season, you have to pick the right date. And I'm looking at you, Penn State football.
Yeah.
Because that's a problem. Bobbing and weaving around Penn State football in central Pennsylvania is a thing. It's a real thing.
Uh-huh.
And so praying that you're going to land on, at the very best, an away game of a team that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
Secondarily, landing on a home game that's at noon. Well, actually, really, a bye is like the real,
a bye is the best.
And then really just sinking low when you realize a game is an evening game.
You're also dodging dates and, you know, with brides and grooms.
Yes, with weddings.
Spring and fall.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially now, I think fall is a very popular time for weddings. And so That's a problem not only for that's a problem for the venue, it's a problem for the band, it's a problem for everything. And so going into it without that knowledge or that real planning of that, I mean, sometimes you got to plan way far out to make sure that you get what you want.
It's just like
planning a wedding, except for I got to raise money doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my goal is always the next one is the best one.
That's nice. That's good.
So that's my saying. The next one is the best one. Knowing I've already put a really, really good one on top of the one I did before. You know, always looking for more money, more attendance, a better unique experience for the guests.
Yeah. So are you planning anything now?
No, I'm on hiatus.
You're on hiatus.
I'm getting ready to plan my own 60th.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I told you.
You did tell me about this. So this is exciting.
Yeah,
we like to throw big parties.
We throw big parties, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason I brought this up and I asked you that question is because it seems to be an unusual year. Our first gala we did this year, and I'm not going to put any names out there in the universe, but we've done it for several years, and attendance was pretty dismal this year.
Mm.
I think people are afraid to spend money. I think people are afraid to commit. And I don't want to say it was disappointing, but it was not like the prior galas. And I think it was a bit, I think it was a bit disappointing for the organization. And, you know, of course, we did what we could on our end as a vendor to assist and to kind of promote. But I don't know if you're aware of any challenges for 2025.
I haven't heard anything specifically, but honestly, I'm not planning right now, other than I'm doing this sort of backdoor planning with a friend who's hosting her gala, and she's still in the building years. So I'm expecting that she's going to have a better gala than she did last year, better than the first year. So I think that probably the economy and all of those things that you talked about play a role. But I also believe, and I don't know which gala you're referring to, and I don't want you to tell me, but you said you've been doing it for a couple of years now. I also think they have a lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's very challenging as an event planner to keep coming up with something new and fresh and exciting. Yeah. And keep making it fun. And because, again, it can become a signature of the organization. It almost becomes a part of the brand. Mm-hmm. When you have a really good gala year after year after year, it becomes so important to that planning, that budget, that fundraising component of that organization, that you have to keep making it better and better. You have to keep growing it. You have to keep making it fresh. And when you have 7 or 8 other galas, or 10 or 15 in the same year,
yeah,
all trying to chase the same theme or chasing the same thing, it's hard. And sometimes they're just tired.
Yeah.
When people start to get, I don't want to say bored, but
you might need to pivot.
Mm-hmm. You're done. Yeah. Pivot. It's been done.
Yeah.
And we'll still donate. We'll still support in other ways, but it's not really fresh or exciting anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a hard thing. That's a very hard thing to manage. I haven't heard anything specifically, but my own attendance at galas, I mean, we're usually a 4 or 5 a year, mm-hmm, in addition to whatever I'm working. And I don't know that I'm looking at you, Penn State football. We're missing a few. We're missing a few. And, yeah, you know, with other travels, we're missing some things. And so I won't even be going to as many.
Yeah. I think it's kind of an unusual year, but I'm hoping things will shift. It's been an unusual couple of months. Yeah. I'll just say, I mean, there's a lot that's happened in this past
couple of months. Yeah, I mean, obviously we have a whole new government. We have a whole new stuff everywhere. And I think there are people on edge. And, hard to go and spend $150 or $175 on a ticket to a fundraising event when I need to buy groceries.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, that goes back to cultivating the right demographic.
Absolutely. We're a small community, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes it very challenging. Okay, so I'm going to open this up.
Okay.
Rapid fire question.
Okay.
So it could be anything. It could be everything. But I want to know, what's the biggest challenge you've ever had with planning a gala?
Not having a lot of support. Not having man hour support. Not having boots in the field to help me raise money, to help me gather donations, to help me actually put together an auction, which is, I run a very large auction. I follow a standard of 1 to 1.5 items per bidder, which is sort of an industry standard. Some people don't like that. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of hours. That's the biggest challenge I've had. That's my biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn.
Your turn.
What's the most interesting theme for a gala that you've either hosted or attended?
Well, I'm going to talk about my galas. You know, I've had three of my galas. I've done 8. My three top is the 10th anniversary of the American Cancer Society Benefit of Hope, where we got to honor, we did a special thing where we honored every single sponsor from day one. And so that was a really, really amazing night. Like, we gave glass. It was like a big deal for me. And it was the last one. I stepped down after that, after 4 years, and it was a big event. The second one was, believe it or not, our Outdoor Country Club's 125th. Mm. I didn't have to raise any sponsorship for that. So I got to focus on some really, really great fun things. And we had the same decor planner that we always have. And I mean, it was just transformed and amazing. But probably my very, very favorite ever was the most recent, the nightclub thing.
I thought so. I thought she was.
It was just a super fun night. I mean, it was cool. It was fun. And we did, you know, we kept people engaged and it was just, it was fun.
What's the one most important piece of advice that you would give a new gala event planner?
Plan an event that you want to attend. Yes. And it goes in all those pieces that go back into that, you know, being organized, start with the end in mind, set goals, have a vision, create a work plan and a timeline that you stay within and build a team.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too. What else you got?
I've got nothing.
You got nothing?
I got
all right, I'm going to go random here.
Okay.
And I like to go random.
Rando.
But where were you born and raised?
I'm from good old York. I was born in York and I was raised in Dover, which is, okay. Yeah, I was raised in Dover.
You're still on that side of town.
I am. Again, I used to not be. I did leave for a tiny bit after college. I went to the big city in Baltimore because I thought I was going to go get my big PR job and, right out of college. That didn't happen. So you come home, tail between legs, and really, you know,
it happens to me many times.
Happens to all of us, right? So we do live on that side of town now again. But we did live in East York for a while, which is the other end of the universe.
Pretty much. It feels like it.
Yeah, it's 25 minutes. I can get to Lancaster almost as quickly as I can get to my old home.
I mean, Teresa and I are neighbors.
Yes, we are.
We are kind of in the same neighborhood. Yeah. We literally kind of live right across the street.
Probably, if we counted houses, probably no more than 20 houses between us, if we actually counted distance of houses.
Yeah, except she's across the street on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
She's
on the good side of the tracks.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
She's on the newer side of the tracks. I'm on the older side of the tracks as it comes to our neighborhood. All right. What's your favorite food?
Oh. I don't know. Pasta, Italian, pizza.
Ooh, Italian. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Chinese. I don't know. Pizza, probably.
So you don't discriminate, really?
No, right? Not really.
Equal opportunity.
I am.
Hey, so am I. I mean, hey.
Yep. Okay. You're speaking of random.
Yeah, random.
If there was one organization that you could put on a gala for, anywhere in the world.
So on my vision board when you're in your 20s and you're doing your vision board, I wanted to be on the board of the SPCA. And I wanted to do a gala for the SPCA. I had nothing to do with the SPCA other than having adopted, you know, a couple times from there in our younger marriage situation kind of thing. And even before that, I was always an animal lover and I wanted to support. So I actually achieved that. I wanted to do a gala for the York County SPCA. I don't really know. I think about that a lot. Like, who would I want to do for next? And I'm going to take it full circle back to the very beginning where I say it has to be connectable for me. So, like, this organization that I'm kind of helping a little bit with some consulting, it's a phenomenal organization with an incredible mission that I have zero connection to. Mm-hmm. So I don't have, I feel for all the people that do. And I have people in my very closest social circle who do. And so I can relate, you know, empathetically that way, but it's different. It's a completely professional for me in this regard, right? Like I know when I'm helping her, it's because I'm trying to help them raise more money for their mission. There's not a passion for me in the same way. And so I don't know. I'd have to really think about that because anyone who knows me knows that I have two passions. All you have to do is get on my Facebook page and you'll see that I only ever talk about breast cancer and dogs. So the PGA.
She does. I
vouch for that.
But you also like to travel.
Yeah, we
you
travel
love
a
to
lot.
Travel. You travel a lot. You know, as a matter of fact, we had to really pick our dates to get in here around travel. And then I got sick and it was a whole thing. But where is your favorite place you've been to?
Oh, gosh. So we've been to some great places. We've been to a number of places in Europe and probably my favorite we've been to Italy, but we've been to Spain twice. And I think that I actually like Spain even more than I liked Italy. But we've been crazy places. We've been to Morocco. We were in Argentina. We're going to Tanzania in the fall. So who knows?
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think you've been like a masterclass.
Oh, thanks.
Tonight. I'm hoping that other event gala planners retain something from this, kind of get some knowledge Is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience tonight about what you do, what your passion is, or any kind of piece of knowledge that you'd like to share?
Well, so I think I've probably put a lot out there. I think the biggest, I'd like to, you know, make the differentiation between a professional event planner who has maybe some different processes than what I do as a volunteer event planner, that there is a little bit of a different process. Because I have to manage a volunteer team. It's different than managing, yes. You know, like when I was yes. a boss, when I had a team that worked for me, if something didn't happen, something happened.
Yeah.
And when you're managing people who don't have that same level of accountability, unless they have the same level of passion, that can be a challenge. And so, again, I think it's really goes back to, you know, the same thing, really having a connectability, finding the people that share your
passion
and who are willing to work as hard as you, or at least willing to give you what they can in that process. And, you know, just doing it out of love. Everything that I talked about and all of the rules and all that stuff, but you have to have fun too.
Yeah.
Right. Like at my events, I have a rule that no one on my team, no one who's speaking, no one on my team drinks. And no alcohol, except for, you know, maybe the toast until the work is done, the business is done. And then you find me on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you get nuts. So I think it's just about the connectability, the passion, and the reason, the mission.
Well, just for fun, I'm going to tag all of our local nonprofits in our area, because I think everybody's important, and I think it's important to support everybody and their mission. So I'm going to tag a lot of the ones that we work for and a lot of the other ones that we do not, because I think everyone deserves a platform. So I'm going to put those in our comments. I thought we had a great time tonight. Thank you so much
for
joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, everyone, Teresa Schultz Fogelman, everyone.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you diving in and giving us the intel. Anything else? No? All right, everyone. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Peace out, y'all.
Thank you.